Board will come to order. Good morning, and welcome to the 1,331st meeting of the Board of Directors. Our first order of business is public comment. I'm told we today have no speakers for public comment. No one has signed up. So the agenda is before the board, as previously distributed, with one, or I suppose two modifications that can be seen on the second page, in addition to an administrative action, and another item on the motion for executive session will come up later. No other changes of which I'm aware. If there's no objection, we'll accept the agenda as it is set before us now. Hearing no objection, the agenda is approved. And that brings us to the minutes of the May 22nd meeting, as previously distributed. Is there a motion on the minutes?
Move approval.
Mr. Benjamin moves the minutes be accepted as read. Is there a second? Second, Mr. Graham. Any discussion on the minutes? Any additions, questions?
You have to turn on your microphone.
My microphone is on. Are there any questions on the minutes of the May 22nd meeting? If not, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries, and minutes are accepted. Next item is the report of the Writers Advisory Council. I believe Ms. Iacomini is here for the Writers Council. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Members of the board, I'm pleased once again to be with you all to do a brief report on RAF's workings during the last month. At our June meeting, Rick Harkham, who's Metro's budget director, came to talk with us about the development of Metro's capital plan. RAF, of course, very much understands the nexus between capital improvements and improvements for riders. I think we know that we heard during the fair increase hearings that a lot of what riders told the board and the RAC heard as well, that those improvements are things that come from capital. So Mr. Harkin will be coming back to us, and RAC is going to make suggestions along with the staff list. We also heard from Jim Hughes concerning Metro's proposal to route some blue line trains over the yellow line bridge. I like to call that yellow line enhancement instead of blue line realignment. I know what's in a name, but sometimes there's a lot. RAC is still interested in receiving more detailed information on how Metro has reached out to customers in that area to get their feedback and what the surveyed customers have said. Mr. Hughes will be returning to us. This alignment really is a big deal. I, frankly, am a orange line rider. I'd love to have fewer trains coming through the Roslyn portal, but there's lots of other folks in Arlington, the jurisdiction which I represent on the RAC, who have other concerns. So we really need to be very careful about this. At your May Planning and Development Committee meeting, you heard about Metro's plans to improve bus service on its busiest corridors. Staff has also come to the RAC's bus subcommittee meeting this month and provided an overview. And RAC shares the board's excitement about Metro's plans for improving bus service along the most heavily used corridors. We really were impressed with the work on the 30s line, and we really look forward to such a good public process again. We will in the future be wanting to have a discussion about smart trip cards, how we're doing with that. We're particularly concerned about our bus riders and about people who will need to purchase smart trip cards and to put more money onto them, particularly bus riders who may use bus stops that are very heavily used but aren't co-located with metro stations where it's very easy to update your smart trip card. So we don't want to see folks trying to add cash to their cards and holding up a whole line of bus riders because they don't have any other way to do it. So it's also important that the machines are able to accept cash at places and not just credit cards. We will be hearing in July, too, I'm hopeful, from Mr. Kubitschek more about rail cars that will be coming our way that we're going to all be using for a long, long time. And I know that RAC and a lot of riders have suggestions for how these can be improved. And finally, just to state the obvious, it is clear that June has been both the best and the worst of months for Metro. The rail system, of course, suffered several service disruptions. But yet, we've had, what, now 8 of the top weekday ridership days? It's incredible that the public is responding and still using the train this much. And really, it does show how much we all rely upon it. I think Metro staff has worked diligently to provide some level of alternate service and made major repairs in a really short amount of time that helped rail riders quite a bit.
But as with any human endeavor, there always remains work to be done, and communications is one of them. I subscribe to the e-alerts. I also look at a lot of listservs. And I can tell you that the levels and types of information coming out from the service disruptions from the derailment to power outage were varying levels. I could get from the press releases from the website, when I could access the website, were very fulsome and told me a lot, whereas the e-alert I got when the derailment happened was, there's a train having mechanical difficulties outside of courthouse. Well, the magnitude of the difference of those things is pretty great. And I think we'll, RAP will be helping to work on some of those. And I know that Mr. Francis had said that there will be internal roundtables and discussions, and I'm hoping we can get some RAP members and some other members of the public in on that, because while it's good that Metro looks inward, Metro needs to continue to look outward to the riders. And there's lots of good things, I think, that people have noticed. I know that one of the board members mentioned this morning of how better to let people know before they get through the paid area that there's a problem. You know, maybe it's something as easy and not as expensive as just the flashing blue light special. When this light is flashing, there's something going on. Look around for a sign or go talk to the station manager or ask someone. Maybe we just need some visual cues that that the system could implement early, and it wouldn't cost so much. There'll be better things coming down the line. Today you have to approve some of the technological improvements for the website that will help, so that people will have better e-alerts and will be able to access the website better in an emergency. It was just overwhelmed this last time. So I think everything working together keeps moving forward. But one final thing I would like to leave you with, just sort of in the realm of were it ever thus. I was doing some research on Clarendon the other day, and I came across an article that appeared in the Washington Post on September 8, 1934. Apparently, Washington had had record rainfall. They had over 2.6 inches of rain in a day. And here's what happened. The heavy rains disrupted traffic on the Roslyn-Clarendon spur of the Arlington and Fairfax Railway. Drain waters undermined a 25-foot stretch of the roadbed and caused the collapse of poles which carried the line's electric power. Passengers were transferred to buses and taken to Clarendon, the original bus route. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Iacovini. The more things change, huh? All right. Any questions arising out of the report? Very good report. Thank you very much. I just wanted to make a few observations. Ms. Iacovini described this past month as the best and the worst of times, and I think that's well put. We've had a number of significant disruptions, some of them seemingly for completely unrelated reasons, although quite a few of them have the related cause ultimately of being induced by weather, whether heat or rain or both. And at the same time, we have had the biggest month. I'm sure when it's totaled up, it'll be the biggest month in Metro history, but we're particularly seeing on a daily basis some truly incredible numbers. I remember some years ago when the high ridership started catching up with the special events days, we'd say that, it used to be that the top 10 days, for ridership were the inauguration, the March on Washington, whatever it is, and now it's last Tuesday. And now it is literally last Tuesday. Oh, no, it's last Wednesday. Thursday, Friday. The past week, I think we have broken top 10 numbers in something like five of the last 6 days or something in that order. So that Friday was the number three day, I believe, in Metro Rail history until yesterday, which was now the number three day in Metro Rail history. Before yesterday, we had 9 of the top 12 or 10 of the top 13. I don't know what it is now. We must be to like 11 out of the top 14 days. But I understand that the ridership on the rail system yesterday was around 846,000 riders. So is that third or second now?
Second.
Okay. So the number of 800,000 passenger days is going to be an interesting little factoid when we can total it up next week when the month ends, because I think that also will give an indication of just how high things have gone. June is always, a month for surge. We would expect it to slack off somewhat in July and obviously in August before rising in September and October. But we clearly have a combination of things, an overall trend that has increased ridership on our rail system, on our buses, on public transportation systems throughout the region, all of which have been showing growth for several years now. That's obviously partly a result of people being stuck in traffic congestion and trying to find different ways to get around. It's partly, I think, you know, the understanding by a lot of people that our environment, not only locally but globally, is affected by how we get around. And clearly at the moment it is greatly affected by the current state of the price of petroleum, reflected in gas prices over $4 a gallon. We can see that this is not something that is likely to reverse anytime soon. In all likelihood, it will continue, and from everything we hear from experts, whether they are talking about climate change or the peak of oil production on the planet, all suggest that this demand is going to increase, if anything, even more dramatically in the years to come. At the same time, we see the strains on our system that were inevitable on a system that is, you know, particularly speaking of our rail system, getting on to be over, you know, 32 years old or so, and to the point where a significant investment would be necessary under any circumstances. The fact that we're having sustained high volumes day after day is going to make things more difficult unless we are able to significantly increase the investment in basic capital. And to meet the growing demand, we're going to need to be able to make improvements. That means some things, big extensions like the Dulles Rail in particular, that are necessary, but it means much more than that. It means a lot of improvements to the existing system everywhere people live now. There'll be more development close in and near wherever there are nodes possible because we have existing infrastructure, and we have to be prepared to make those improvements. And this is what concerns me the most, because we've been working here for some years, everyone associated with this agency, board members and staff, and our writers as well, to communicate to the larger political audience that we need to have the resolve at every level of government, federal, state, and local, around our region, to make that investment. It takes years to actually be able to implement these things, so we have to be looking forward and making the investments now. They're going to pay off in 1, 3, 5, and 10 years. We've had some progress in that area, and you know, a year ago we had apparently all three, Virginia, Maryland, District of Columbia, all having acted to provide funding that would deal with that maintenance problem that was identified by the Blue Ribbon Panel now several years ago. And we had at least a bill that was, you know, introduced in Congress. We're now in a situation where, although it's hung up in the Senate, it's had good at positive action in the House, the U.S. House of Representatives. But because of events in Virginia over the last several months, Virginia now has not even the $50 million that was put up in the 2007 legislation. And so Virginia, as part of the overall transportation funding crisis in our state, does not have its share of the money necessary for Metro. For these reasons, the governor has called the General Assembly into special session, which began on Monday, and is now considering various proposals. The governor has proposed a comprehensive package that would do much to deal with our state's transportation problems and would specifically address the metro issues. It would also provide a lot of money for the kind of investment that we desperately need in the National Capital Area on our side of the Potomac River. It is unfortunate, though, to be watching what's happening and to not be able to conclude that it is likely to result in positive action. Much of what we're seeing right now looks like it is not intended to reach some kind of compromise, but rather is a lot of posturing to avoid having to face up to what is always a difficult decision for elected officials. None of us wants to vote to raise taxes. But we are at a point where I think the broad public, certainly the business community, understand that something needs to be done and they want the problem fixed. And I think that most officials are dedicated to doing that. Nonetheless, when we see some of what's been happening this week, it's hard to not feel somewhat discouraged. I understand that this morning, for instance, a bill was reported on the House side that would do nothing to solve the state's overall maintenance problem, which is on the state side is draining money out of construction and is part of the difficulty we have and costing Northern Virginia hundreds of millions of dollars, but would solve the regional problem, presumably including the metro funding issue, by calling upon the local governments to raise taxes again on everything from real estate transactions to hotels to commercial real estate. And I also understand that it has been stated by a member on the floor that members in Northern Virginia, specifically citing myself and the chairman of the Fairfax Board, had said locals were willing to share some of the pain. And that, of course, was true. A year ago, that is what we said, and we did agree to a deal in which we would, you know, we said we'll be willing to do some of this too. Even though it's primarily a state responsibility in Virginia, we will. And I would point out that to this point, it is only the local governments who have really had to feel any of that pain, because we, in fact, are the ones that under the law passed in 2007 had to shoulder most of it through the Northern Virginia Transportation Authority by going there and voting for all these things that the Supreme Court then threw out. We voted for all those in large numbers across party lines and across the region. We were also given authority at the local level on the commercial surcharge that they apparently now want to use again in the bill. And Fairfax and Arlington have, in fact, already acted and voted to impose that tax. Meanwhile, the state's contribution to this, which was largely and very limited through the abuse of driver fees, the state repealed. The same people who passed it 12 months or 14 months ago repealed it about 5 months ago, and so it's no longer there. So, you know, I think if we're trying to move credibly to some kind of compromise, there have to be viable alternatives that are put forward that are serious and meaningful, and I hope those will be forthcoming. If they are not, Virginia will become the obstacle to the region dealing with its biggest problem in infrastructure that threatens the economy, the environment, and the way of life for everybody in this region. So I urge all those who have any stake in things in Virginia, whether you're somebody involved in government or somebody who's just a commuter trying to get around, whether you have a cousin who lives in Virginia, tell them, contact their General Assembly members and tell them, don't come home without fixing this problem. Otherwise, as difficult as June may have seemed, and another year and another 2 years and another 3 years, things are going to be much, much, much worse. That's my comment for this morning. And next item is the report of the General Manager, Mr. Cato.
Put this back on. I share some of the optimism that you have, but yet some of the frustrations of trying to get capital funding for the present time and for the future of the system. But I do have a few things to report concerning this system. The 4th of July celebration is coming up very shortly, and as you know, that is a big day for us. It is an all-hands day where we carry hundreds of thousands of people in the national celebration on the Mall. And again, Metro will be there. We will be prepared, and we take great pride in helping people get to and from the Mall to see the fireworks and to celebrate the birth of our country. It has been a very difficult month, as many people have mentioned this morning. There's been disruptions. And it's been very difficult for our customers, particularly those on the Orange Line. And I just want to acknowledge those difficulties. And we are working to continue to make improvements. Sometimes our fixes get in front of our communications. And that's something that we have assessed that we need to improve. But I would like to say, from the standpoint, as mentioned by the RAC report, our staff work very quickly to make repairs when we had the various disruptions, whether it was a storm, the heat which caused bending of the rail, or other issues, to get the service back in place. It does not mean we cannot do a better job of communications. We fully understand that and need to work on that and continue to work on that in the future. The other issue I'd like to bring to the board, at the last meeting we discussed the new regulations concerning charter services. Since that time, the Federal Transit Administration has also put out new draft guidelines that would tighten the interpretation on school bus operations. And specifically, this deals with trip of services that we might operate that's open to the public, but it does pick up a large number of students on routes. We're currently evaluating those regulations. We have worked with it will have an impact on all of the jurisdictions, but the major impact would be in the District of Columbia if the new regulations do go into effect. We have briefed district officials and the new chancellor of schools and education, as well as the mayor's office. They have sent a joint comment letter to the Federal Transit Administration, and Metro has also submitted comments concerning the new guidelines. Should the new guidelines go into effect and there is no special exemption for school services or TRIPA services in the district, we would have to request that the final policy statement permit that any changes to existing bus routes, or we will ask, not be in effect until the beginning of the 2009-2010 school year. And we still don't know the status of that yet, but we will keep you informed. In addition, we need to develop a contingency plan for school bus operations for the next school year, particularly in the district. And my staff is working with the appropriate offices on such a contingency plan. Concerning other routes, the 30-line reconstruction will take effect Sunday, June 29th, and we will begin to operate the restructured 30-line. We have information outside of this room talking about those services and the process that we went through and the impact. There's been a great deal of customer involvement, which we asked them what they needed from these services, and we're ready to implement the service with a new level of bus supervision. Customers will have the choice to ride quick, limited-stop, regular metro bus or convenient local shuttle services, but this project is just not about schedules. It's about reliability. And we've added supervisors, and we've given them the technology to monitor very closely what's happening from an operating standpoint, as well as giving them the authority to make changes in the operations on the street, to respond to any events, traffic conditions, accidents, or load factors. And we will report back to you next month and monthly on the implementation of those services. The district also has installed 34 new bus shelters along the 30 lines route, and we also are installing new improved bus stop information and maps at all 89 shelters along that line. These are just some of the improvements we're making. We expect for this service to provide a far higher quality of service to our customers, and it's kind of a model for the improvements that we will be making in the future. And Mr. Chairman, that's the end of my report concerning our services and operations. But today I would also like to say this is the last meeting that our Chief Financial Officer will be with us. Chuck Woodruff has been with us almost 3 years, and he's leaving the authority. This is his last meeting. I want to thank him for all the work that he's done in his almost 3 years with us, and particularly the year and a half since I've been with the authority. Thank you, Chuck.
A couple of questions on the 30s line. That is beginning this coming Sunday.
Yes.
And I assume, always when you start up these things, there's always bugs right at the outset, so I imagine there will be some things to be ironed out in the first few days. But I think this is an interesting opportunity for us to see, you know, yet another level to which we can bring bus service. I'm very interested myself and would look forward to taking a ride up there with you sometime. Again, maybe let it get started a little bit, but I would like to see firsthand kind of how it's operating and how it functions and you know, see what it's like. It's not a place I would, it's on the other side of the river from that which I live, but I'll be happy to make a trip over to see firsthand what's being done. I wanted to ask you, though, about the school bus regulation.
Yes.
One thing I didn't hear you say, is APTA involved in this matter? Are we getting some national discussion going?
Yes. Because
it's got to affect communities all over the country.
Yes, there is national discussion. APTA is taking a leadership role. We have provided our input to them as other transit properties around the country. But independent of that, we're also working with the various local jurisdictions, particularly the District of Columbia, because they will be the hardest hit under the new regulations should they go into effect.
I realize that the most deeply affects the district right now. And let me say, this is not just about transit agencies, although it obviously can create problems with transit agency. It's mostly about taxpayers. And I would say about taxpayers being ripped off by legislative efforts intended to serve specific private interests. If it's, you know, the taxpayers invest in these assets, and if they want to use them to move their school children, why should they not be able to do that just because somebody else wants to be able to have the government pay them? And I think that's quite outrageous, and it's the kind of thing that happens because people don't see it happening. If it's brought out in the daylight, I think it's hard to justify. And although, again, in Maryland and in Virginia, there's a fairly limited amount of the use of public transportation, general public transportation services to move school children, in the future, we may all wish to do that more. And it may make more sense in the future to do that. And I really think it's in everyone's interest to draw attention to what's happening here and to try and work with others from around the nation to preserve this flexibility, not just, again, for transit agencies, but for local governments everywhere in the country. On that point, Mr. Benjamin?
On exactly that point. Mr. Cato, if we were, in fact, to terminate services that now are trippers that meet the criteria that the federal government is looking at, wouldn't we need to conduct public hearings before we terminated services?
Yes, it's one of the voices before the client. Yes, all procedures require that we conduct public hearings before the federal government. Magnitude of the change. However, the guidelines.
But the guidelines themselves have a timeline to it, and that would not allow the public hearing process to take place as currently proposed. Before we would have to make the changes.
And if people, and so there is a public hearing process, and we would ourselves have to do that.
Yes.
And if people came and all uniformly testified against the change, you're saying that the federal government is requiring us to ignore the results of the public hearing process and terminate service whether or not the public is asking for that service?
Should the guidelines be put into place, yes. I'm not saying that was the intent, but should the guidelines go into place, we would have to terminate those services. But again, that's one of the issues that we are communicating back to the Federal Transit Administration.
I think it's important that the federal government perhaps realize that it's taking inconsistent positions here. One at the same time, it does ask us to do things like hold public hearings to determine what it is that the public wants. And at the same time, they're telling us to follow a set of rules that might ignore what the public is asking for.
Thank you. Ms. Graham.
Mr. Chairman. Mr. Cato, I note in your report that you indicate that the DDOT has installed 34 new shelters along the 30th line. I note in your report that you've referenced the fact that DDOT is installing new bus shelters. This is one of those situations which the public doesn't really understand, in the sense that in some inscrutable fashion, the bus shelters have been split between DDOT and Metro WMATA. Is Metro, and so I'm constantly hearing, you know, why are these bus shelters so dreadful? And invariably we find that it's one that is operated or responsibility lies with Metro WMATA. What is Metro WMATA doing in this regard? This is an issue that's been before us many times. We've had a lot of discussion about some joint working relationship. Is there any progress at all on this?
I'm sorry to hear that the information you received that the majority of those stations are
No, Metro invariably. Stations. On occasion, it's...
Oh. We do respond. We do clean stations on a periodic basis, and when we have reports either from an operator or a customer or from a public entity, we work to clean those, and I've asked our staff
not
to respond.
Mr. Cato, yes. It's not the cleaning issue.
Okay.
Well, what's happening now is because of the number of new shelters that are being built under a DDOT contracts, the contrast between those new bus shelters and the Metro WMATA bus shelters, which are not undergoing similar renovation, is becoming ever more evident and of concern. And explaining to people that the discrepancies here is, it would have been better, let me just cut to the quick, it would have been better had we reached some kind of an accord on all of this several years ago, which some of us attempted to press, but it didn't work.
Mr. Graham, if I can give maybe a little history. Most of the bus shelters that were installed by WMATA in the beginning, I mean many years ago, that's essentially was the program, was an installation of bus shelters. We've attempted to try to maintain those shelters every couple of weeks with the cleaning program, which is not what you want to talk about. But there's never been a real maintenance program for the shelters. And and part of the district's interest in providing more information and better amenities for the passengers, there is a program to where they are basically taking over the majority of, if not all of the shelters within Metro's control within the district and installing their own shelters and providing, and then Metro's cooperating with them with maps and other information to try to make the amenities better. But there is not a, to answer your question, there is not a shelter that I'm aware of, a shelter replacement upgrade program of WMATA shelters.
Thank you.
Mr. Litt.
Yes, I was going to comment to some degree on school bus issues.
I was going to comment on the school bus regulations that have been issued, recognizing that we have lived very well under the current guidelines, which actually provides opportunities for the public agencies to provide tripper service in light of the fact that the tripper service is open to the general public, cannot list schools as destinations, and must be a normal bus route. That's the way they've operated for years, and there's really no reason for them, in fact, to be changed. This issue is not one that just affects the district. As I have traveled around the country, almost every particular major urban city is confronted with this same problem as it relates to their school children, particularly as it relates to the upcoming school year, where they, in fact, have to do planning, allocate funds and resources, and there's a great deal of uncertainty as to what the requirements are going to be, and their budgets don't accommodate these additional requirements that there are so for that type of transportation services. There is some things that we can talk about off camera that we can, there's some action that I think can be taken to correct some of this.
Look forward to hearing that. Mr. Monomer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a couple comments again on the FTA regs. One, it's encouraging to hear that other board members have the same concerns that the district has as the obviously the major impacted jurisdiction by these regulations. There's a, I think, to Mr. Zimmerman, the chairman's point about reaching out to APTA. I think right now the U.S. Conference of Mayors, I believe, is having their annual meeting. I think this is a perfect issue for that body to pick up, and I would encourage the general manager to reach out to that body if possible and get that on the agenda, because that's obviously an issue that mayors around this country are going to have some concern about. And then following up on Mr. Linton's point, I think there's a timeline between planning routes, contracting for routes, and then, frankly, where's the money coming from? I mean, the district sends its money to WMATA Forest Service, as Mr. Zimmerman pointed out. To get those funds back to provide service, it's frankly impractical for the coming school year. It's something that would certainly take at least a year to plan and operate. So I think some of those practical elements need to be made clear on the part of WMATA. And then on a positive note, very, very excited and very, very thankful for the work by WMATA staff and even DDOT staff and jurisdictional staff on the 30s line. It's an excellent piece of work, lots of collaboration and public outreach, and I'm really excited, and Mr. Chairman, hopefully I'll run into you on the 30s line sometime next week.
Maybe we'll go out together.
All right, sounds good.
Look forward to it.
On
the school matter, though, the school bus service question, I'd be happy to sign a letter, and, you know, with the permission of the board, would sign any letters that might address this, including to some of the bodies, for instance, as Mr. Monomer suggested, expressing our concern about this. That's the will of the body, then, you know, staff could work on something, and, you know, as chairman, I can try to communicate with some of those folks. Okay. Ms. Hutchins.
I wanted to comment. Is this the same letter that we asked the last month regarding the regulations in general? Because we did raise this, and we talked about the charter services and how you had made some progress in moving forward, but we wanted
related but distinct issues, I think.
Yeah, they are
distinct, but they're
part of the entire group regulation. So I just didn't hear any response on that, because while we have gotten past the current impact this year, we were looking forward to seeing that we were not in the same position a year from now for some of the services that we're, I'm talking about the Wolf Trap, for example, that
right.
was, took quite a deal for us to get worked out. I just want to make sure that we send a, if we're going to communicate, that we make sure we send both the communications.
Very good point. Mr. Cato, I assume then that we'll talk about, we'll follow up with that, and to the extent that we need to make further communications on that issue, again, also, I'd be more than happy to sign any letters and make any phone calls.
I will work with our government relations staff. We'll put together some letters to respond
Very
to
good.
Both of
Thank
those
you.
Issues.
Mr. Benjamin.
The bus shelter issue, I did want to point out that at the time that bus shelters were originally put out throughout the region, this board determined that the Metro bus shelters would only be bought once, would be maintained, would not be replaced, and would not be rehabilitated. So since they were first put out there, Metro staff has had no ability to do anything other than maintain them and move them around, but not replace them. And that's a board policy. It's got to have been about, it's got to be more than 20 years ago.
All right. Well, there you go.
But the policy is still in place.
There you go.
That's consistent with what I've heard. All right. Mr. Cato, I believe you have a second item.
Yes, we do. The employee spotlight. I'm going to ask Gerald Francis to highlight some outstanding activity and actions by Metro employees.
So, Mr. Chairman, if I can have you and Mr. Cato come to the center of the room.
He's first.
Members of the board, it's my pleasure to recognize three members of the Metro team. The common theme of these three gentlemen is that they faced unexpected situations that called for decisive action, and they took the action. I'd like to first call Stefan Petrosky. Mr. Petrosky, a general equipment mechanic in our plant maintenance department, was riding an Orange Line train to a doctor's appointment. He was riding in the third car of that train, and suddenly he felt the rail car begin to bump and heard the sound of a screeching metal. He immediately went to the emergency call box, identified himself, gave his location, and told the operator he thought the wheels were off the track. Once his suspicions were confirmed, Mr. Petrosky lent a hand, moving through the train, making sure the train's passengers weren't injured, and telling them what the problem was and when the rescue train was going to arrive. He helped evacuate the passengers as the rescue train came on. That afternoon, Mr. Petrosky had expected to be reading magazines in his doctor's office waiting room, but instead he was challenged by events, challenged to step outside the responsibilities of his daily job, and we're honored to say that he did it admirably. Let's give a round of applause to Mr. Petrosky. Mr. Daniel Marina. Mr. Marina was headed downtown on the Orange Line between East Falls Church and Boston when he noticed something out of the ordinary. The track just didn't look right. He had to make a decision: should he go forward or should he stop the train? Operator Marina made a quick decision to stop the train and report to the Operation Control Center that there was a heat kink in the rail. We'll never know what would have happened had he proceeded. There may or may have not been a derailment. What we do know with certainty is that he made the right decision. He saw what could have been an unsafe condition, and he stopped the train. That afternoon, certainly our customers were inconvenienced by our work to correct the heat kink, but Operator Marina did what was best for Metro customers. Mr. Christopher DePetris. Mr. DePetris had been a fully certified bus operator for just over a week. That afternoon, a man and a group of boys had been having words on his bus. At one of the stops, a group of young boys and the man got off the bus. Then there was a gunshot. The man cried out that he had been shot, and Operator DePetris opened the doors so that he could re-enter the bus. Once the man was aboard, Operator DePetris closed the doors and left the area of the stop, reporting the incident and then taking the man to the closest Metrorail station, where an emergency medical vehicle would be waiting to take the man who'd been shot in the area of the left hip to the hospital. Each of these employees stayed calm and made the right decisions when faced with adversity. They demonstrated calm under pressure, and that's why they're here today to be honored as the Employee Spotlight.
My report.
Thank you, Mr. Cato, and thanks again to each of these three individuals recognized today. As Mr. Francis noted, what each situation had in common was that a regular frontline employee employed in different aspects of our operations had suddenly to make a really important decision, and that could have involved, and in some cases quite vividly did involve, a direct question of life and death, potentially, of the safety and the safety of our passengers. And every day, thousands of employees are in that situation for this agency and have to make decisions that can affect the safety of the hundreds of thousands who do ride each day. We thank them all for what they do.
Mr. Chairman?
I'm sorry, Ms. Hewlett.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yes, I too wanted to thank those three employees for doing a stellar job. I mean, they've really stepped up to the plate and show the caliber of employees that we have here at WMATA. They went over and above the call of duty and put our customers first. So I want to thank them. And I also want to thank Mr. Woodruff for his 3 years of service as well, and wish him well as he goes on to other ventures. And so we want to thank you for that as well.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Hewlett. All right, we now have committee reports. We begin with the report of the Planning, Development, and Real Estate Committee. Mrs. Hudgens.
Thank you.
Very well, without objection.
The item E is the Shaw Story Avenue developer selection, and the committee met in executive session this morning and in the public session, moved approval of the identifying as developer, as well as two conditions regarding final agreement on the inclusion of project affordable housing components that would be consistent with our board policy, as well as documentation to the board that clarifies.
Thank you. I'm sorry. The roles and responsibilities of the members of the development team, and I so move.
Mr. Chairman.
Motion by Ms. Hudgens, seconded by Mr. Monovan. Mr. Graham.
Thank you very much, and thank you very much, Ms. Hudgens, for moving this up on the agenda. I have to join my colleagues on the council in a press conference regarding the Supreme Court decision in the Heller case on gun control, and thus I wanted to have the opportunity to speak to this particular matter. I have decided to vote in favor of this today. I would ask that all of my comments, Mr. Chairman, from the committee discussion be incorporated by reference so that I don't have to repeat all of that.
You mean in the record?
In the record.
You would like the minutes to reflect the comments you had made in the committee.
That's right. Is that all right with you?
I see no problem.
Okay, and that way I don't have to review all of this. I would like to say that I'm very pleased that there are two amendments to this that have been adopted. One, ensuring that there will be an affordable set aside which is very important to the people I represent in Ward 1, and it's a stated objective of this board as a matter of policy. And I look forward to having the specific information on what is in the proposal and what can be negotiated with staff. I also appreciate the amendment regarding the clarification of roles within the development team. I think that will be also very, very helpful, and I appreciate the support of the board in that regard. I will note that this is not a final decision, that the terms and conditions regarding this particular joint development, as with every joint development, have to be presented to this board for final action. And thus, of course, I reserve all of my opportunities and options in regard to that final vote. But I think that for present purposes, this is an acceptable proposal. I do want to say as a separate matter that I think we need to clarify and adopt a business ethics and integrity policy to apply across the board with great clarity in terms of what we expect from applicants for joint development projects. And as a separate matter, I very much appreciate the support of this board in endeavoring to do that as soon as practicable. So I thank you very much for all of that. And I just want to say, one of the voting members from the District of Columbia, that I support the budget as I understand how it's been worked out and the assurances that we've received on that. And so I appreciate this opportunity to speak. Thank you.
Mr. Graham. There's no further discussion. The question is on the motion to approve the selection and term sheet with the conditions noted. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? That motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
There were three other action items from the Planning and Development Committee. On June 12th, we met, and the board received information on the WMATA property, the use of WMATA property for non-WMATA transit projects. And Mr. Chairman, we moved forward with a resolution for approval for the policy that allows no-cost transfers of WMATA-owned real estate property to local jurisdictions and state governments for reimbursable and other transit projects. Mr. Chairman, I move approval.
Ms. Hutchinson moves approval. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Benjamin.
I do have a question.
Discussion, Mr. Benjamin.
There is a substantial inconsistency between the board action information summary and the resolution because the changes that were made by the committee that are included in the resolution were not included in the summary. So I'd like to know which one of the two we're approving.
It's the resolution that we're approving.
I think the short answer to that is the resolution is the board's action. So that is the most critical language. But we certainly don't leave any ambiguity.
We don't have both. And are we saying that in general we're approving the resolution if both exist?
I certainly would say if there's a resolution, which generally there should be, that is the action of the board. Ms. O'Keefe?
That is correct.
Okay. So the resolution always overrides the board action information summary.
Yes, it does, if there are two.
I would say that the resolution is the only thing the board has actually done.
Except that several times there are no resolutions.
And then that's why I always ask what it is we're acting upon, and there's some statement, and the statement is the thing we're acting upon. Now, people then in applying it may go to the report and say, well, this is what the board had in front of it. But in fact, what it matters, what is the board action, is the resolution or whatever is specifically in the motion. So yeah, it's good to clarify that, but I also think that it is unambiguous,
okay,
properly interpreted. However, if you think there is an ambiguity introduced by something that is in the summary, it would not be inappropriate to point that out now.
Well, there were three changes that were made by the committee. One was to...
Is that on now?
Okay.
One of those was to add regional transit facilities in the first of the conditions. It approves not only authority facilities, but any regional transit facilities. The second one was to retain the property in public transit purposes. And the third one was to say that the transfer had to have the approval of the board of directors. Those three are included in the resolution. They're not included in the board action information summary.
Okay. Thank you for pointing that out. Again, it is the language in the resolution, which is what matters here. We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries unanimously. Next item.
The next item is the bus network evaluation. Item brought forth the findings of the bus network evaluation report validating the need for the 985 expansion
Motion by Ms. Sudgens.
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Monoma. Discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. Item C.
The third item is the
motion by Mrs. Hudgens. Is there a second?
Second.
Mr. Giancola can second. Can he not? No. Yes. Thank you, Mr. Giancola. The motion is made and seconded. Is there further discussion? This is on-call engineering services. If there's no discussion, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries.
And your next item is Rhode Island Avenue interim parking.
Motion by Mrs. Hudgens, seconded by Ms. Hewlett. Discussion? We did have, I think, a fairly interesting conversation about this in the committee, and I would just note briefly what I discussed at the time, that, you know, on the whole, this is a project that is going to bring people who will actually live at this station and will be able to walk a very short distance to get on Metrorail. I'm trying to remember the numbers, but it's how many residential units, again, is in this project?
Joel.
I thought I remember the number, but I don't want to say and be wrong, so.
Joel, come on.
How many residential units? I remembered it was 200-something. So, you know, something over 200 units, 240 maybe, probably in the neighborhood of 400 people, which is a lot more folks than would park in these parking spaces. And they'll be getting there without any cold starts of their automobile that do anything to the pollute the air or clog our streets or drive up the price of gasoline. So, you know, this is exactly the kind of direction we need to be going in. My only question is whether we should be replacing these spaces at all. Ultimately, you know, storing automobiles is not good use of land near Metro. What we need to be doing is more of what this project overall is doing, which is, you know, creating activity and places for people to live, work, and shop right near a Metro station. So I'm glad to see it going forward. I hope in the future we'll even be more critical of whether we should be building structured parking above ground within a distance of a Metro station, as close as this is. Any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries.
One item, and that was the Jackson Grand building reallocation analysis brought to us by Bowman Sparks Association, and just the possibility of selling the building. And that is all the items.
Thank you, Mrs. Hudgens. We'll move to the report of the Committee of Finance, Administration, and Oversight. Mr. Benjamin.
The first item on our agenda is the approval of the FY09 budget. This is fairly critical because if we don't do this, the system stops operating on Tuesday.
So we probably ought to do this.
I thought it might be useful to just summarize what this resolution says so that we're all certain that we agree as to what we're approving. First of all, we're approving a $1.9 billion total budget. of which $760 million comes from local jurisdictions. So this is a very heavy commitment by the local jurisdictions in this area. The operating portion of the budget is $1.3 billion, with more than half of that paid by fares. The Metro Matters capital portion of this budget is $500 million, including $62 million for urgently needed infrastructure renewal projects. We are, in this budget, reallocating funding for $109 million of Metro Matters funding in order to do these urgently needed projects. $87 million of that in the existing infrastructure renewal projects, all of which are detailed in the attachments over the next 2 years. $22 million of funding for Metro Matters' 8-car train initiative is being taken out of the budget in order to do the because it's not needed, is being reprogrammed into the infrastructure renewal program in order to do the urgently funded activities. There's $11 million in here that are for safety and security projects subject to receipt of federal funding. If there's no federal funding, we don't do those projects. And there's $28 million of debt service that we're still paying on the original construction of the 103-mile, actually 106-mile, rail system. And there are reimbursable projects for $20 million. Given all of that, before I move anything, I understand that the state of Virginia has an adjustment to this budget that they would like to make, or an adjustment to the resolution that they would not like to make.
Mr. Benjamin, thank you. As we discussed in committee, there was a concern on our side about the incorporation of what have been reimbursable projects as regional actions affecting the District of Columbia and service in the District of Columbia and Maryland, with attendant costs for Virginia, but without an attendant improvement in service. And as my colleagues noted, we have, not surprisingly, given the what we're observing in public transportation ridership generally, we have a number of services in which we're really straining to meet capacity, to meet the demand. My colleague from Lower Fairfax, who's had to leave, has described the situation on Route 1 where one bus after another can go by and they're so full you can't get on. In fact, the last time he had to wait for two buses to go by to get the bus that would take him here. He described to me today seeing people along that route 30 deep at stop after stop after stop, and you do the arithmetic and figure out how many buses it was going to take to get through. We're seeing that all over the place, and given what's going on, we just can't get through the next year without addressing that to some degree. We had discussed that need, and I've had conversations with my colleagues around the table here, and the resolution which is in front of you as an alternate is identical to that which came from the committee without recommendation, but it includes one clause that is fourth from the bottom on page 2. That identifies $1 million of regionally funded Metro bus service improvements for Northern Virginia to be incorporated. I would note a couple of things. One, that the specific service improvements we're talking about, there is a list, and they will be hammered out with a final agreement among the Virginia jurisdictions. And that the overall resolution before you is otherwise identical, which is to say it will involve no change to subsidy. The general manager assures us that given the magnitude of this budget and some of the other things he's looking at, he can find adjustments to incorporate this. But the all the other numbers are the same. Now, there will be some minor changes that flow from the implementation of that service that can affect some of the smaller details, but the overall subsidy number would remain as it was in the budget that was before the committee 2 weeks ago. Mr. Benjamin, if you have no objection, then I will move this.
With the additional.
Yeah, this is the alternate, what says alternate resolution number 2. It's really, it's the alternate resolution that differs only in that respect of the clause that I identified. And I will move its approval by the board. Seconded by Mr. Benjamin. And now discussion. And back to you, Mr. Benjamin.
I'd like to make one note on this. given the inclusion of that set of information, or that $1 million of activities, that says that resolved, the two resolved phrases, number one and number two, which refer to attachments A and B, refer to attachments that by definition will have to be changed slightly, and that is that the jurisdictional subsidies, although they're probably approximately correct, would change as a result of the services that are provided and where those services are provided and how those services are provided. And since this is going to be included within the budget, attachment D will have to change in that the total expense will stay the same, but the balance between Metrobus and Metrorail will probably change unless you can find a way to do it entirely within Metrobus. And then some of the sub-items that we are at this point approving would change.
That is clear enough from your side?
Yes, it's very clear.
If there's no objection, then by unanimous consent, we'll incorporate that in the motion. Further discussion?
Mr. Chairman?
Mrs. Hutchins?
I think the changes are the substitute that we provided is acceptable, and I think it addresses really what all of us see as a priority. But as I raised in the committee meeting, what I find is difficult in moving forward on this, and while I support it, I still believe very firmly that what we need before us is a policy, and a policy that defines what our pilot, what qualifies a service to become a pilot, how it will be evaluated, and how we will determine when it will move to a regional service. Because I think while we all think all of the services that we can think of are going to be needed and should be provided, we know budgets don't allow for them. And when we say regional, we really should be working to ensure that there are services that provide the regional balance that the authority has been developed to address. And so I think that we look forward to see the staff bring that back to us as soon as possible, because as I reviewed our prior approval last year, one of the things we said was no new services, and in essence this does give us new services, and it wasn't following the guidelines that we had, but they are acceptable services, but all of us could think of new regional services that we would like. So I gladly vote in approval of the budget, but I want to make sure that we come back with that policy to do so.
Thank you, Mrs. Hutchins. I agree that the developing and employing good criteria for evaluating our services is important to inform us in how we allocate resources among the different things we might do. I would not limit that to the pilot situation that Ms. Hudgens specifically called out, because I think that that's, you know, in general true. Things that we've been doing for a while, you need to evaluate and say, is that better than something else we might be doing? I will say that in terms of the kind of improvements that will result here, they will be those that have significant regional impact and that directly relate to the other demands on the system we're talking about, both in terms of getting people to rail. You know, the example I gave you on the Route 1 corridor in Fairfax, you know, people who see those overcrowded buses decide to drive to the garage and get on Metro, or then they decide to drive all the way. And so, you know, this is a line that is very much feeding not only employment centers but the rail line, as are the other kind of services we're talking about. In some cases, they provide relief to the rail system. For instance, in the Orange Line corridor, as heavily crowded as everyone knows it is, we have the 38B service that connects the District of Columbia and the Roslyn-Ballston corridor, and the tremendous employment and residential growth on either side of that. Georgetown, of course, doesn't have a rail station, so that service is particularly important. But for those from Farragut to Ballston, it's an alternative that allows some people to decide not to go into the system and further crowd the rail line. So improvements there will be helping us on the rail line as well as above ground. And that's the kind of thing that we're talking about, that under the present circumstances we need to find ways to do more of, even far beyond what we're able to do in this very limited area of improvement. The motion before us is the approval of the fiscal year 2009 budget. If there's no further discussion, then all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. The motion carries unanimously. Thank you very much. That's your heavy lifting for the year, Mr. Benjamin, but you have a few other items.
Well, at least we will be operating on Tuesday.
That's good to know.
Just pushed that a second ago.
It went off.
It keeps doing that. This is a very exciting program that is being undertaken by the District of Columbia, in which they will have a single identification card that will be good as a driver's license, as a library card, as identification for many district activities, and it will be a transportation card. It will be a smart trip card. They would like us to work with them on this, and they will pay the full costs of doing this. So this is a fully reimbursable activity. And do you want to say something more about that, Mr. Monomy?
I'd love to. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're very, very pleased to work with Metro on this exciting initiative. This really, really ties, underscores the fact that transportation is a function or a part of everything that you do in life. And by providing this one card, it ties activities that children and residents of the city use at the library, at Parks and Recs facilities.
That's it.
And I think, hopefully, as I believe Mr. Zimmerman mentioned, this pilot will be a pilot for the rest of the region to look to. So very pleased to enter into this partnership with WMATA.
Did you move?
I will, and if I could, I'll move the motion.
Mr. Monomy moves. I believe Mr. Benjamin seconds. Further discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries.
Our next, yes, it's on. Next item is for the diesel swap authorization. This is actually a derivatives transaction that's carried out by our authority on a regular basis in order to provide insurance. It's a hedge transaction. Insurance to assure that our diesel fuel comes in at the lowest possible price. At the board's request, this resolution has been modified to assure that the transaction will only be carried out if the budget will not be exceeded by the transaction. That is to say that the price will be below budget if we do this swap. That will be a major challenge, I believe, for our financial people, particularly in the current environment. And so that does leave us open to the potential that we won't do a swap and that our diesel fuel prices will, in fact, increase above budget. That having been said, I move this item.
Motion by Mr. Benjamin. Seconded by Ms. Hewlett. And I guess I pointed this out in committee, that this only will happen if the price of oil falls sufficiently. And in this case, it would need to be in the area of $90 a barrel. So there's a very strong likelihood that this won't happen. But no one knows, so there's no harm in it. If there's no further discussion, all in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. Mr. Benjamin.
The next items, D through I, are all very similar. They are a series of technical support and consulting contracts for IT development and operation. We discussed them in the committee after actually having had them come to the board and being sent back to committee. We determined that they were in good shape and were done extremely well. So I would like to move en bloc items D through I, all of the IT activities.
Second. Motion by Mr. Benjamin, seconded by Ms. Hewlett, to approve items D through I en bloc, and that is to say to approve the associated recommendations of the general manager and any resolutions, but I don't think there are any resolutions on those. They're all statements under the recommendation within the report, usually the final item on it. That is the actual motion. Any questions or discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. Final
and
item.
Our last item is approval to initiate and award contracts for on-call technical consultant services for collective bargaining. This is assistance to help us as we go through our various collective bargaining activities for the coming year.
And it's within budget.
And it's within budget, yes. And I move that item.
Motion by Mr. Benjamin.
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Giancola. Discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
That ends our report.
Thank you. The Customer Service Operations and Safety Committee also met. Mr. Litton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, the The committee met on June the 20th, not June the 6th. What's the date that we meet?
26, right?
Yeah, this is the old report.
Your old report?
Yeah.
Okay.
June 12th?
That's correct. That's correct. Today's report.
No, it's today's.
Oh, today's report.
It's the 26th. Right.
Today's report.
This morning's meeting.
Previous meeting. Thank you. Corrected. The operation performance, Mr. Francis provided the committee the monthly briefings on the fiscal year or 8 year to date operational performance indicators as they compare to the established goals. Analysis was completed of the elevator escalator failures, and the conclusions were provided to the board as requested at the last meeting. Item B, Mr. Francis provided the committee a status update on the WMATA communication initiatives being pursued as a result of feedback from customers, the Writers Advisory Council, board members, and the communications matrix team. Chief Tabor provided the committee monthly reports on crime statistics in the metro system for calendar years from 2003 to 2008. As requested at the last meeting, the chief recommended 10 metro stations in the District of Columbia, where outside cameras should be installed. Safety performance indicators. Mr. Keel provided the monthly report on fiscal year 08 safety performance indicators for rail and bus, including passenger injuries, collisions, fires, and the injury report as compared to fiscal year 07. That's the end of the committee's report from the Customer Service Operations and Safety Committee, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Litton. That will move us to administrative items. And we have a number of actions, I believe, 13 altogether with the additional item. We're on administrative actions, items 1 through 13 under item 11. Is there a motion to approve any or all of these?
I move to approve all except number 10.
Mr. Benjamin moves approval of the recommendations under administrative items 1 through 9 and 11 through 13, with 10 to be considered separately. Is there a second to the motion?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Gincola. Any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. That leaves us with item number 10, which is a request for approval to authorize the general manager to negotiate and execute a cooperative agreement with the United States Mint to advance the circulation of the dollar coin in the metro rail system, to approve a sole source action to Cubic Transportation Systems for software changes, and to authorize an interim funding source as a financial backstop until receipt of funds from the Mint. Mr. Benjamin.
Question I have on this one is, it appears in this one that we are putting a $750,000 upper limit on the amount that the Mint will contribute to us. Is that right?
Yes, it is.
That is not included in the resolution. Could we include that in the resolution?
Is there any reason we couldn't incorporate that in a clause in the resolution?
Since the resolution is now, we have agreed the active document. Does that mean that if the amount is less than $750,000, we will not get that amount from the Mint? Is that right? In other words, if the cost of this is $700,000, we'll only get $700,000.
That's correct.
How about if it's $800,000?
We've worked with the Mint for several months on this project, and I believe we have a very solid cost on it. But if it were to exceed, staff would propose we come back to the board and we would cite as a source of funds, a potential source of funds, some $25 million in fare equipment upgrades that the board approved last July. At this point, there would be sufficient money in that project to fund a minor overrun, although I don't anticipate it.
Do you want authority now up to some higher limit, or are you asking to come back?
I think we should come back because I believe we can do it within this amount.
Mr. Chair, if I might. Sorry, Chuck, you're in your last day. I anticipate, too, that we can do this for the $750,000, but I do not want to have an undue delay because we have to come back to the board if there is a $15,000 higher expense than what we anticipated. So I do ask, Mr. Benjamin, if we could have some authority to go above that amount, and I bring it back to the board just to make sure that the project continues. We wanted to stop the project, bring it to the board, and get authority, but come back to the board for ratification should the amount exceed the $750,000.
So you don't want to put another dollar number on it now and say you can have another $50,000 or $100,000 from another source?
No, I did. Well, since you brought that up, we could put another number to it and say put $50,000 as a contingency from the account that was mentioned by the chief financial officer. However, we would bring it back to the board should we exceed that amount to let you know that it occurred. Yes.
$50,000 from the Fair Card Rehab project, if necessary.
If necessary.
For overruns, and above that, come back to the board.
Yes.
Okay, so those are.
Okay, Ms. O'Keefe, if you have language for that.
In this instance, I'm going to depart from what I said in our last conversation about resolution versus. Oh, sorry. In this instance, I'm going to make an exception to what we discussed in our conversation about BAIS and MEAD and ask the board to simply look at the board action information summary, because that contains the contract actions that will be authorized. And the resolution adds nothing to it except the authority to negotiate with the Mint, and that is contained in the BAIS. So.
Well, I can understand if the action the board takes, the motion of the board, makes reference to another document as contained in the report of, then it's by reference, but there actually has to be such a reference. So, I mean, if you think it's sufficient to do that, but I'm not sure that that does necessarily what Mr. Benjamin was trying to do.
And it certainly doesn't add the other $50,000.
No, that, I didn't get to that part yet. I was just asking the board to focus solely on the language in the board action summary.
Okay. Is the goal, Mr. Benjamin, to limit the potential liability of the agency?
Yes.
And so you want something that says, provided that WMATA expenditures will not exceed X with a contingency of?
The Mint will provide at least $750,000, and additional expenditures by the authority shall not exceed $50,000 from the following source.
So to do that, if you look at the recommendation section of the BAIS.
Yes.
And on the first, authorize the general manager to negotiate and execute a cooperative agreement with the United States Mint to advance the circulation of the dollar coin in the Metro Rail system in an amount of at least $750,000. And then in the last, number three, authorize an interim funding source as a financial backstop until receipt of funds from the Mint. And Mr. Woodard, you're going to have to tell me again the interim source. The interim
for the additional $50,000.
Right. Right.
From the automatic fare collection project.
All right. So it would be authorize an interim funding source from the automatic fare collection project as a financial backstop. Well, interim funding source from the automatic fare collection project in an amount not to exceed $50,000 as a financial backstop until receipt of funds from the Mint.
I think that's fine if that's now all a be it further resolved or attached to the clause in the resolution. And I'm willing to accept that to be incorporated in the resolution.
That's fine.
As
we
such.
We'll do that in the final resolution.
I'm just one member, but if that's your motion, Mr. Benjamin,
that,
the resolution with that amendment. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Mrs. Hudgens. Any further discussion? Mr. Lynn.
Was this better discussed in committee?
No, this is an administrative item. I don't believe it was discussed.
The Mint is limiting their exposure to this to $750,000.
We're trying to limit ours too.
Yeah, we're trying to limit ours.
I would just, if I may, Mr. Lynn, my understanding of this, which we may want clarification on first, this is an item we resisted for a lot of years. The Congress then mandated we had to do it, and now we are fortunately able to get the Mint to pay some of the cost of it, hopefully all the cost of it. But I don't think we have the same flexibility that we may have had at one time before this.
And this is for R&D and development of the software changes that will be needed by proprietary cubic software that we have to pay for them to adjust?
Yes.
Is this only related to WMATA? Are there other transit agencies that are going to require similar type of accommodations?
Yes.
Is the software specific to us, or is it generic software that will be used by other transit systems as well?
Mr. Linden, no, that actually is very specific to us. Most of the other transit.
We surveyed, when we initiated this process, we surveyed about 10 major transit agencies across the nation. And everybody is fairly fortunate in that they have all got fairly modern equipment by a variety of AFC vendors. Our equipment dates back to the early 1990s, and it is an older system. It's not designed to do this. This software programming is actually a device-level software in the machine. It is only good for our system, and Cubic is the only one who can do the work.
I'm finished.
Is there time sensitivity to making this change?
There is time sensitivity on the back end. The Mint would very much like us to finish this as soon as possible, and certainly no later than the end of this year. So given the fact that we have to physically have Cubic do the software development, we have to test the system, then we have to go out and actually install this in 900 fare vendors system-wide, there's a lot of work to be done. So there is sensitivity.
So what happens if we don't?
Under the bill, all federal funds can be stopped. That's basically what it is. We cannot receive our federal funds.
That's the question I have. Yeah.
Further discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. I believe that concludes administrative items. Regional reports. Mr. Graham's not here. Anyone with a report from the district? If not, Mr. Benjamin, report from Maryland.
Yes. The Washington Suburban Transit Commission will be meeting on Monday, the 30th of June, where we will have the election of our officers for the next fiscal year. And it's a hotly contested election.
Is that right? Anybody we know?
Exactly. We will report on the results of the election in the
we
next
anxiously
meeting.
Await. MBTC, Mrs. Hudgens.
You very eloquently described everything we have there, but I have to say, as you described it, I think we just heard that the General Assembly is adjourning
until July 10th.
And as I heard that, I thought, gee, let's assume it's 9/11 and we have a crisis and they decide to go home and come back 11 days later to address it. And that's about where we are on the transportation issue.
You know, my favorite bill that's been debated this week is one from a House member that would create a lockbox. There's a lot of talk about lockboxes. And that's been talked about for the state trust fund. This is a proposal to create a lockbox for the regional transportation fund, so the Northern Virginia Transportation Authority, so that regional money could not be taken for other projects elsewhere. This, as I understand it, from a member who opposes any of the revenues that would actually go into such a lockbox. That's the state of things in Richmond.
Well, I was just simply going to add that when you ask your friends that live in Virginia, make sure they live outside of Virginia to influence the people that are outside as well as in the
northern Virginia. Yeah.
So that we really do make some progress on it. I think our overcrowding at Metro is an example of the crisis that we face. Folks are on Metro because, one, it's a good thing and a good service, but it's also because there's just nothing else that's working better. So.
Well said. I move that the board meet in executive session to discuss legal issues with respect to Monument versus WMATA, consistent with board procedure Roman numeral 6B, contractual issues with respect to Smart Trip contract operations, consistent with board procedure Roman numeral 6D, and safety and security matters consistent with board procedure Roman numeral 6F. Is there a second? Mr. Benjamin?
Second.
All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries. We're in a closed session. We'll be back downstairs following it to certify the closed session and to act upon any items arising. Thank you.